morning. Happy Saturday morning to you out there, wherever you might be on this Saturday morning. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I was thinking this week, isn't it sad that this is not leap year, that this is a 28-day February? So I just like kind of wish it was a year that we had that extra day in February, the month of love.
All right. I now know. I mean, if you listened last week, Beth told us that her first thought in the morning is, this is going to be a great day kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm now convinced you're a loony. I mean, who cares if there's 29 days in February or not?
Because then it's the
The only people I think that can care who are born on February 29th.
I know.
They probably wish it was a leap year.
I think that would be fun. Do you know anybody that was born on February 29th?
Yes, I have a coworker's husband who was born on February 29th.
Who's like a 15.
He's currently like 16 or something. So.
I love that.
And we got an interesting show today.
I want to get
people on. You know, I kind of pinch myself every once in a while. Like, where do we get these people? Mm-hmm. I'm just this guy who lives in Cincinnati and knows you. And all of a sudden I'm talking to these people on the radio. It's awesome. Dr. David Ireland is with us today, and he's the senior pastor of a church in New Jersey. He's written a new book called The Skin You Live In. He is a nationally renowned expert sort of on racial reconciliation, especially in the church. And so, again, we've touched on this topic before, but to have a guy like Dr. Ireland on our show,
he was just on Dr. Phil.
He was on Dr. Phil, and he's coming on our show.
We're not 7 degrees from Dr. Phil. We're like 1 degree from Dr. Phil.
That's exactly right. Actually, I think Dr. Phil is 1 degree from us.
Okay, good.
I think that Dr. Phil is probably wishing that he had the kind of quality conversation that we are going to have with Dr. Ireland. That's what I think.
Why don't we ask him on the show and see if he'll come?
Dr. Phil?
Yeah.
Well, sure, why not? We'll see if he'll come on. Maybe he will.
Well, the thing I like...
Anyway, it's going to be a great show, and I know people are going to stay tuned in.
No, well, the subtitle of Dr. David Ireland's book is called Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. So I'm just wondering, you Cleveland child growing up, did you have friends of another color ever in your school? Who was your first friend of a different color?
I did. Probably my first friend of a different color is a guy named Mark Creighton. We played sports together. We played football and basketball together. Great guy. You know, just loved him. He was a smart kid, you know. We just had a great, great time together. I wouldn't say that we were, like, best buddies. I had a group of friends that I ran with. But Mark was probably the first guy that I really spent a great deal of time with who was racially different than me. What about you?
I mean, I grew up in a predominantly white suburb, but we did have...
Mm-hmm, as did I, yeah.
Yeah, we had two African-American students in my class, and...
Wow.
That too.
That's not many.
No, that's not many. And
yeah.
I mean, now, of course, I have children of another color. I live in a different country with people that are different color. I kind of went from one extreme to the other. But I think back on that, and I realize that I always was aware of their color, where I don't think my children are even aware anymore that kids are a different color, like, because they're in an extraordinarily culturally diverse setting. It just literally never comes up what people's colors are or even their cultural background. It's just so diverse, and I just think about how different that is. And then if you go back one generation more, like for my parents and my grandparents, how they wouldn't even be able to get inside of the mind of our children's generation. It's just different.
You know, it'll be an interesting question. I think I might write it down on my notepad today. It wasn't originally on there, but it is an interesting question. This question of do children recognize race and the differences in race. So you're growing up in a multi-ethnic, multi-racial situation where you live. It would be an interesting thing to ask Dr. Ireland, hey, do kids notice? Should we talk about the differences or should we not talk about the differences? Right? I'm guessing that he'll probably tell us, hey, we need to celebrate and know the differences, but I don't know. I mean, that's an interesting question. I'd love to hear his answer on that. So,
and then how everybody's different. Like, you know, some people really appreciate the vernacular that talks about being colorblind, and other people do not want you to be colorblind. They want you to see their color and appreciate their color. And how,
right, celebrate it.
There's no really good answer. Everybody kind of has their own. I mean, Bill Cosby made such a I don't know if you saw in the news about a week, maybe it's now, or like 2 weeks now or 3 weeks now, he got on and talked about that nobody calls Caucasians that are U.S. residents European Americans. Why do we call African Americans African Americans and we don't call white people European Americans? And it created quite the controversy. Folks were absolutely had lots to say about that. Both colors, both sides, and it's a volatile subject, and I'm excited to hear how Dr. Ireland is going to walk us through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what else is going on? We haven't talked a little bit about your travels and, where you're going to be speaking and all those kind of things. What's going on with you these days?
Oh, I just got back from California. I was down in San Diego speaking at a conference.
That sounded like I was teeing you up to answer that question. But I genuinely did not know what you'd been doing. So that was just a genuine conversation. I wasn't teeing you up to say all this stuff. I just was genuinely interested.
Well, you were just in California, weren't you? You just were attending a conference or something there recently?
Yeah, Online Education Symposium for Independent Schools. It was actually quite awesome.
What a mouthful.
It was in Los Angeles.
What made it awesome?
Well, I mean, education is just, it is going through a revolution. Just and technology and the ability to change how and when education is delivered. Not only for, we could have a great show talking about how online opportunities are changing opportunities for kids in the third world, mm-hmm. Who've had no access to education or certainly quality education. The opportunities, especially in the Christian world, to educate students all over the world in a particular worldview is unparalleled. We've never had this opportunity before. We could have a show about that. But this was primarily for independent schools, and the biggest difference right now in education is that time is no longer a fixed variable. I know that sounds pretty fancy, but what that means is
Dr.
I don't have
Hall,
to sit in a seat.
Tell us what you mean by that.
Yeah, I don't have to sit in a seat for 50 minutes for 7 bells so that somebody can tell me what I should write down.
Mm-hmm.
We can do things online through technology that completely blow up what has typically been sit in a classroom for 6 to 7 hours a day, and at the same time not lessen the quality of that education, and what was really exciting, not lessen the ability to connect with our students in a real guiding kind of way as an advisor or a mentor. There are just some great, great things going on, and quite honestly, in my personal doctor opinion, the Christian world needs to wake up and figure this out. Our Christian schools need to figure this out. So, as I said, that could be a whole different show all on its own. But it was a great conference anyway. So that's where I was. I was in L.A. So where have you been?
I was in San Diego at a conference, but I got a morning off, and I decided, I'm only like spitting distance from another part of Mexico, which is the country where I've lived the last 16 years. So I got in the car with a couple people, a little rental car. We went down to Tijuana, checked out a little children's home down there that I've been hearing about and I wanted to see firsthand. And, just it was a fun. I like to wake up.
You're in San Diego. I thought you were going to say you were in spitting distance from like La Jolla, and you were going to go hang out there at the beach or something.
Maybe you have a little beach gazing going on as well.
Okay.
And some coffee.
All right.
Mixed together.
Absolutely. Well, hey, as I mentioned, we got about a minute before the break. I just want to remind everybody, David Ireland is going to be on our show, Dr. David Ireland, who is the author of The Skin You Live In. And we're just going to have, I hope, an open, honest discussion about racial reconciliation, especially in the church. He is a well-known, renowned pastor, not only for his 6,000 members in New Jersey, but he works, I think, with the NFL and the NBA and all kinds of things. So I hope we have a good, real discussion about these issues.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see you right
absolutely.
After the break.
Absolutely. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll be back in just 1 minute, and we hope you will be too. See you then.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth, all the way out there in Monterrey, Mexico. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing good. Happy Saturday morning, listeners and Rob.
Absolutely. Hey, we have got this. I'm just so excited about today. This is a topic that we've talked about before on the show.
To have
a guest like Dr. David Ireland, who's on our show today, really is going to give some great information, insight, understanding to our listeners. So let me give them a brief background. A founder and senior pastor of Christ Church in Montclair, New Jersey, 6,000-member church, 40 nationalities represented in his church. And he's got a new book, The Skin You Live In, Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. Dr. Ireland serves as a consultant to the NBA. He leads chapel with the New York Giants and the Jets, even at the Pentagon. He's written 20 books. This is a guy who knows what he's talking about, and we are just lucky to have him on the show. We're glad that he's here. Dr. Ireland, thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob. Thanks a lot, Rob and Beth. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you about what it means to love people that are different than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I guess the first question that would pop up in a lot of people's mind is why does this matter? I mean, you know, if we're loving the people who live around us and we're comfortable doing it, why does this matter so much?
It matters a great deal for a number of reasons. Number one, Jesus calls us to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. And neighbors does not mean people that look like us or act like us or even necessarily believe like us. But we have this biblical mandate to love our neighbors as we love ourselves. A second reason is the fact that America is increasingly becoming brown. You know, the sociologists call it the tanning of America. And so we're living in a society where our neighbors, our coworkers, our schoolmates, they're different than us, and so how do we get along with them, and how do we create the kind of community, national community, that says this is a very healthy place to live in relationally, emotionally, and all of the above? And so I have a number of reasons.
I've lived 16 years out of the country, Dr. Ireland. I live in Mexico, and I have children of various colors, and being immersed in a culture where this is as an hourly conversation inside of my head, where I'm leading a team that has several nationalities involved, and I find that I can sometimes get impatient when other folks aren't interested in the conversation. What's like the first step if you are a listener and you're like, I want to be in a multi-ethnic faith community, or I want to fellowship with other folks, and you find that people around you are kind of apathetic to that conversation, what's kind of the first way, the first step that you can take to encourage other people to join you?
And that's a great question, Beth. I mean, I was in Mexico a couple of months ago, and it's a great country, and I love the people. And I think when we think about it, the answer to the question would be, everyone wants to be a teacher. And so we then must make ourselves students, and that'll quickly engage people around us. For example, if I'm meeting someone, let's say of Polish descent, and I'm not Polish, I'd say to them, you know, I've been so fascinated with the Polish culture. Can you tell me some things about it that makes, I'm excited about it, but I just feel like I don't know that much. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, their eyes are going to open up, and there's going to be a smile on their face, because all of a sudden, they're now being positioned as a teacher,
uh-huh,
and I'm now being positioned as a student.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so making that, I remember taking my car to the car wash last year. There's little scuff mark on it. When it came out of the car wash, the scuff mark was there. I asked the guy who was drying off the car, and I can look at him just by looking at scars on his arms that he must have had passed with drugs, you can look at his face. He was gaunt, and you can see that he's not at the top of life, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And so I said to him, I said, can you tell me how to get that scuff mark off my car? He said, sir, there are three things you must do. And so, and he started to enumerate the three things I should do. And one of them, he says, put some muscle power behind it and start scraping it with your fingernail or with an object that's not going to scar it. And so he automatically took the posture of being a teacher, and I automatically, though I have a PhD, became a student. Mm-hmm. And so he smiled because he said, this guy is asking me a question that I know the answer to. And so when it comes to race relations, I think that would be a great place to learn and for us to grow as students.
Is it more important that we have common ground among the different races, or is it more important that we understand where someone's coming from?
I think both are important. I think common ground's necessary to foster relationship. To understand where someone's coming from also is necessary to get along with them. So they play different roles. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't pit one against the other. I think both are necessary based on also the stage of the relationship. For example, if I want to get a strong, healthy relationship with someone who's of a different race than me, I want to try to find some commonality in which we can both say, let's say we both like tennis. Hey, let's go and have a tennis match on Saturday morning. And that common ground will become a bridge, so to speak. And if I find that I'm not that well-versed on their culture, then I'm going to pose questions along the way as we're maybe driving together to the tennis court or having a bite to eat afterwards. I'm going to ask them questions that's going to help bridge the gap. But both those things are necessary.
You mentioned in your book, we're talking, by the way, with Dr. David Ireland, who is the senior pastor of Christ Church in Montclair, New Jersey, a 6,000-member church, 40 nationalities. Also the author of The Skin You Live In, Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. And you mentioned in your book this idea of being racially attractive.
Yes.
Could you unpack? I know you've been hitting around it already, but could you tell us a little bit more specifically what that term means?
I appreciate that, Rob. I think I may be the one that, maybe I'm patting myself on the back, I think I coined the phrase, at least when you type it in on the Internet, my name pops up in association with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to be able to make the Guinness Book of World Record or something.
That's right.
I think it's a good sign when you type your name up and anything with the word attractive pops up. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, that's good. A racially attractive person is someone who's so comfortable in their skin that they help to make others comfortable in their own skin when they're around them. And so that person is at peace with who they are, and they make you feel at peace with who you are, though there's a difference in our race or in our ethnicity or culture. And Jesus was like that. In fact, in John chapter 4, when he had this conversation with the Samaritan woman by the well, the Samaritan woman, he asked her for a drink of water, which to a Jew was, and then to the contrast to a Samaritan was something that was like crossing the great ethnic divide. Mm-hmm. She's saying, look, I'm a Samaritan woman and you're Jewish and you're asking me for a drink of water. In essence, he's saying, look, I want to use your cup that you're going to drink from. And so, she's saying this is like socially taboo, but yet he didn't let her Samaritan ethnicity stop him. He said, if you really knew who I was, you'd be asking me for water. And so he didn't play into her cultural bias, but because he was so comfortable with himself that he now made her comfortable with herself in his presence. That's what racially attractive people do.
Rob and I were talking in the first segment about who our first friend was of a different color as a child, and just that generational, where we grew up and what that meant to us. And I was just thinking about your own journey in this area of study and in this area of writing. And who was your first friend of another color? And how did this all get started and stirred up inside of you?
Well, let me answer the question this way. The real passion for diversity, how it arose in my life, and then I'll answer the question about first friend, is that when my wife, Marlinda, was expecting our first child, I'm going back now 26 years ago, and she asked me to go to the grocery store to pick up some items. And I've learned that as a young husband, you never say no to a pregnant wife, and you don't give any lip. You just do what she tells you to do. And so I got in the car and drove to the grocery store and got one of those little red baskets held in my hand, walking down the aisle trying to put the items in the basket that she wanted. And when I got to the aisle, Beth, I took the item off the aisle, off the shelf, put it in the basket, and it just so happened I looked up to the other end of the aisle and I saw people of different races that were shopping. Mm-hmm. There were African Americans, there were Caucasians, there were Native Americans, there were Hispanics, there were Asians. And when I saw them, for one of the first times in my life, I heard the audible voice of God. And mind you, Christ Church was only 2 weeks old at that time. I was only 24 years old. I had no clue as to what vision and church life was really about. And the Holy Spirit said to me, David, why can't it be like that in my house, referencing this snapshot of diversity?
Mm-hmm.
And I started crying uncontrollably in that supermarket because I felt God's burden and passion in regards to race relations and how people ought to live harmoniously, you know, in that way. And when I went to the cashier, she must have thought this is a new ploy. Here's a guy crying. He's looking to bum free food. It wasn't that. It was just God chose the most inopportune time, Rob, just to mess me up. And when I think about the answer to the question about, and by the way, my whole life changed at that point. And it that came at the heels of, I was, as I mentioned, I was 24 years old. But something had happened to me when I was 10 years old. My country, my family had migrated from Jamaica. And so we were, and they bought this house in a community called Rosedale, Queens, New York. We were one of the first black families to live in that community. And in 2 weeks, our house was firebombed. Six white teenage boys threw a Molotov cocktail into the rear bedroom window, and it exploded. And, you know, the back part of the house was burned, but fortunately no one was hurt, and the house did not become totally demolished. Firefighters came, put out the fire, and from that point on, fast-forwarding for about another 6 months or so, we had to have 24 hours a day, round-the-clock police surveillance because of the constant death threats that we received. And here I am now. I had no concept as to race and difference because I was born in Jamaica, which was about 99% black in terms of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no concept of diversity or race or race relations or prejudice. I had no reference point. Mm-hmm. Then I found that I'm being disliked and being hated. And when I came to meet Jesus Christ at age 20, he healed me of this feeling of victimization. And the healing was so genuine and so thorough that my world is so diverse. And you mentioned I pastor a church of over 40 different nationalities, and I consult to groups like the NBA in terms of race relations because something happened inside of my life that was so transformational that God made me racially attractive. And so my friends then, from early, a couple of years after that firebombing incident, was all racially diverse. I just began to love people. But it became far more intentional when I accepted Christ as my Savior. And so I've had one Korean friend that was from Korea, and his name was James. And, we just were best of friends. Whenever you saw me, you saw James. Whenever you saw James, you saw me. And I love being in that kind of multiracial setting. I tell people you don't have to become a clone or change your culture, but you have to be able to love people. So I start making a distinction between being someone that is ethnocentric, where your ethnicity is the center of your life, or you're ethno-conscious. So the choice is to be ethno-conscious. I'm conscious of my skin color, my race, my ethnicity, but it's not the center of my life. The center of my life is Christ. And so I try to live a Christocentric life, though I'm ethno-conscious. And that's what Paul talked about. He said, look, I'm a Hebrew of Hebrews. In regards to the Jewish faith, I was a Pharisee, born that way, circumcised of the tribe of Abraham, or Benjamin, rather. And so here's Paul saying, that's who I am, but yet Christ is the one I'm pursuing. He says,
right.
I want to know him. And so he's Christocentric, though he's conscious of his ethnicity.
Absolutely. We're talking with Dr. David Ireland, the author of The Skin You Live In, Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. And after the break, I've written down so many questions that I have, and I hope Dr. Ireland will accept some of those questions. So we've got lots of discussion to enjoy. We hope you'll join us after the break in this discussion. It's Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Join us right after the break.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We hope you're having a fabulous Saturday morning. I mean, it's Saturday. I mean, I hope you're out there driving around, enjoying the weather, doing something that that you enjoy, and we're kind of helping you enjoy that day. So, Beth, welcome back. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing really good. It's nice and warm out here in Mexico, so a Saturday morning looks like a whole day of sunshine for me. So
you always kind of rub it in a little bit, and you say it's nice and warm and all that kind of stuff.
In particular.
Hey, great. We're having a great conversation. Our guest today is Dr. David Ireland, founder, senior pastor of Christ Church in Montclair, New Jersey, 6,000-member congregation, 40 nationalities. He's also the author of a great book, The Skin You Live In, building friendships across cultural lines. And so we're talking, and we talked in the first segment about, you know, the importance of why is this an important thing, and sort of his experiences also, that how he was really just sort of yanked into this idea, that the Lord just sort of yanked him into this this idea of reaching across cultural lines. And so, Dr. Lyon, welcome back. Glad that you're with us this morning.
Well, thanks a lot, Rob and Beth. Really appreciate the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. I was actually thinking during the break, as a personal confession, you know, I'm not afraid of people of other cultures, ethnicities. I would love to engage them in a conversation. You know what I'm really afraid of is that I'm going to do something to offend them and stop the conversation before it starts. What kind of coaching would you offer to a guy like me or listeners like me who are more afraid of offending than being offended?
I think that's, a lot of people struggle with that. I would always say that they need to be forthright with people that they're engaging in conversation or in relationship building, particularly at the infancy. Say something like this to them: I really want to grow in terms of my cross-cultural awareness and effectiveness, so if I ever say anything to you that's offensive, please tell me, because I want to be coachable. And just that candidness allows them to open their hearts. Because when I my doctoral dissertation was on the black-white relationship in large multiracial churches in America. I'll say that with, in a mouthful, but I had to go across the country and really study, why are these churches racially diverse? What secrets do they have and have they gained that we can apply to other areas of life, whether it may be the police force or the fire department or just the Girl Scouts or whatever? Mm-hmm. And so one of the keys is that when I assessed and did focus groups in these particular churches to try to find out what made them diverse, was one of the things that creates a healthy cross-race relationship is vulnerability. Hmm. In other words, vulnerable conversations on race. If, for example, I'm speaking to someone, let's say they're French-Canadian, and I have no friends who are French-Canadian, and I'm just, you know, like from another planet in regards to that people group, when I say to them, hey, I've never had a friend that is of your background, and tell me, do you get upset if somebody talks to you in English rather than French, or do you feel like there's stigmatism that you have to deal with? And my vulnerability opens up their heart, because I may say something to them that's pretty foolish, and they'll say to me, hey, David, that's a dumb question. Mm-hmm. And yet, because I trust them, I will allow them to say to me, that's a dumb question, but I'll remain in the conversation, and they'll clarify why it's dumb and how I should rephrase it. And that by itself is an indication that we have a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. But if they walk away and they think in their mind, this guy's pretty dumb, he asks dumb questions, I don't even know why I'm even sitting with that fella, then we don't have a healthy relationship, because they're not able to tell me that my question's dumb or have a vulnerable response to me. So vulnerability and vulnerable conversations is one of the indicators of a healthy cross-race relationship.
I would just so agree with that sentence. I just my family just spent a few weeks in India, where we have a site there with our ministry. And one of the questions that has always been in my head about India is about the caste system.
Okay.
And I feel like I could read about it, but I didn't know. I wanted like a firsthand account, but I was afraid, like Rob was saying, that I was going to ask something offensive. So I just said to my Indian friends, I got a question, and if it's out of bounds, just tell me it's out of bounds, but I want to hear from ground zero, how much does the caste system impact the church in India? And the conversation we had was the most memorable I probably had in the whole 3 weeks, because we went to this place where I was vulnerable, and they matched my vulnerability, and then you really create connection. And that
Absolutely.
Connection is then what all of the other rest of your relationship is built on. You know, whether or not you ever talk about that particular subject again, it doesn't even matter. You've kind of offered yourself a little bit. And I just agree with that so much.
That's an excellent illustration, Beth, because what it sets is the tone that the Indian individuals that you're talking to, they recognize that you respect them and you respected their emotions and their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So if your question was out of bounds, they felt that you set the tone already in the platform of respect, so that they can say to you, that's off limits. Mm-hmm. And if it wasn't, they felt that you were courteous enough to ask them anyway, so now they want to talk with you. And then they would, in turn, ask a vulnerable question on their part to say, hey, and they'll ask questions about maybe Americans, or what is it like to be an American living in Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
And so the conversation goes to a whole new depth of intimacy and connectedness, which is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things I try to do in my book. In fact, when I revealed my race in this conversation, normally I would not have done that. And the reason why is this. When people read the book, I don't like them to know what my race is. I want them to discover it at the end of the book. And that's what I did in the book, The Skin You Live In. So in the last chapter, mm-hmm. I reveal my race. And so I want them to deal with the subject and wrestle with their questions and experience mentoring through the book and coaching so that they can be much more well-versed in cross-cultural dialogue and how to solve problems that they may be having on their jobs that may be race-related or culturally related. And so, but I just felt like, let me just share the race just, and let's see where it goes in terms of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I appreciate the fact that vulnerability begets vulnerability, if I can use that Bible phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you sow it, you reap it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this conversation, you know, we're talking about some great sort of qualities, humility, being a good listener, the kinds of things, you know, respect for the person you're talking to. The thought that keeps coming back to my mind is that at some level or in somewhere in the conversation that perhaps a conversation around forgiveness might be part of that conversation about reconciliation. Can you talk a little bit about that part of how that might come out as you're having this deeper conversation?
That's an excellent question, because one of the chapters I dedicate specifically to the power of forgiveness, because there are things that has happened historically and even modern day times that require forgiveness, and healing does not flow and cannot flow until forgiveness is extended. And sometimes we think that when we forgive someone, we give them power over us,
mm-hmm.
but not really. Forgiveness simply means I set them free, and the forgiveness is far more impactful on the part of the one doing the forgiving. That means that as I forgive people, they find freedom. I'll give you a case in point without using names. I was going through some training for the NBA guys. My role as a consultant was to deal with all the rookies coming into the league, and since basketball is an international sport, it was to help them assimilate into American culture. And so
right.
I'm coaching, I'm teaching them about processes of reconciliation, how to do, you know, how to connect with people. And this particular fellow was of Asian descent. He had shut down emotionally because some things were happening on the team he was a part of that he didn't understand, having grown up in, you know, in, I won't call his the country's name, you know, just for the sake of his own privacy, but he having, mm-hmm. having grown up in one of the Asian countries, and he didn't understand how to connect. And so I made a statement. I said, there's something about African-American culture that when someone really loves you, they tease you. All of a sudden, after my session, I was whisked away into this private room where I had to talk with this huge guy through his interpreter to try to unpack that statement.
Mm.
And when I unpacked it, a smile started to break out on his face, because I was told by the NBA rep that he had shut down emotionally. He stopped performing on an NBA level, and the team was upset with him. There was a probability of him being cut from his team because of that, but he had shut down emotionally because some guys who are of African-American descent were teasing him on his team, but it was out of their love for him, and he thought they didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I clarified that little social nuance, so to speak, he began to open up again and began to communicate with people, and his game came back to NBA level.
Hmm.
My point is that this thing of race relations, it cuts across the board in every field, every area whatsoever. And when he understood, forgiveness could flow. And that's why it's so important. Sometimes we may not understand, and we must forgive nonetheless. Other times, we must forgive, and understanding will come afterwards. And I've experienced it on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking with Dr. David Ireland, the author of The Skin You Live In, Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. And Dr. Ireland, can you join us after the break just for a minute or two?
Sure.
That'd be great. We're coming up on a break, and, man, what a great conversation. I mean, this is, again, This is 2-3 weeks in a row, Beth, where we have really just dug in and we're giving folks some real great understanding and insight to a topic and an important topic like this one. So we hope you're enjoying the conversation as much as we are. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll see you in just a minute.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Buchenberger. We hope that you're enjoying the conversation as much as we are with Dr. David Ireland, Senior Pastor of Christ Church in Montclair, New Jersey. 6,000 members, 40 nationalities represented. He's also the author of The Skin You Live In from NAV Press, Building Friendships Across Cultural Lines. So, Dr. Ireland, again, thanks for joining us right after the break.
Oh, my pleasure, Rob. Hey, Rob, can we go back to that question about the power of forgiveness?
Absolutely.
And how real this is, how transforming the impact can be. Because there might be some of the listeners who are hurt and are struggling with this thing that someone has offended them, which was race-related or cultural or perhaps even gender. Mm-hmm. I remember it was a while back to help people process their pain. And when you're dealing with 40 different nationalities in my congregation, I don't know some of the experiences that people may have come out of. And so what I did one Sunday morning is to take the scriptures where Jesus was washing Peter's feet and the other disciples, and I began to use that as a platform and a model, so to speak, of forgiveness. And so I asked these two men. One was African-American. Name was Scott. The other was white. His name was Ron. I said, Ron, I just want you, and I said, Ron and Scott, I want you guys just to forgive one another. There may be things going on in your lives. I want you to represent each other's race to one another.
Mm.
And so I set the stage. I had a private conversation with them, told them just to be prepared to wash one another's feet as a symbolic gesture of forgiveness. And so the first guy sat down, Ron, the white gentleman, he sat in a chair. This is in the middle of my sermon. I stopped, explained foot washing to the people, and then Ron sat there. He rolled up his pant legs, took off his shoes and socks, and Scott knelt down in front of him, African-American guy. We had a bucket of water, pail, a towel, and Scott, he had the microphone, and he said to Ron, Ron, I need your forgiveness because I grew up in a home where I saw my father become an alcoholic because of racial victimization. He had been so hurt being a black man in this country that he didn't know how to process his pain, so he turned to the bottle and he began to drink, and then he abused the family. And I grew up hating whites because of what I saw happen to my dad. But I realized as a Christian, I can't let hate rest in my heart or live there. Ron, on behalf of the white race, would you forgive me for the pain and the hurt that I've kept in my heart all these years?
Mm.
And when that happened, Rob and Beth, I saw the Holy Spirit. I mean, people were there just weeping uncontrollably in the audience. Ron started weeping as he forgave Scott. And then they switched seats. Ron stood, Scott sat. He took off his shoes and socks, rolled up his pants. And then Ron asked Scott. Scott's the African-American. Now Ron asked him, would you forgive me? Because I grew up and my dad was prejudiced towards blacks. And he made me believe that we're superior. And I grew up thinking that blacks are inferior to me. And when I came to Christ, I struggled in regards to building cross-racial relationships because of that air of superiority. And I need your forgiveness because I realize I've hit a ceiling in my growth with the Lord. I can't get beyond this stage. Would you, as an African-American man, forgive me for my harboring these feelings of superiority over you and your race? I mean, these guys are very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And when this happened and Scott forgave Ron, I mean, I lost the service at that point. The Holy Spirit had taken over.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw how the power of forgiveness goes into the depth and crevices of people's hearts. Mm-hmm. Now, getting back to the point of forgiveness, forgiveness has to be a four-stage process. First, you have to be able to hold someone accountable for the hurt. The second, you have to acknowledge that people are flawed and fallible.
Mm-hmm.
Third, you have to change your attitude towards the offender. Or I should say third is surrender your need to get even.
Mm-hmm.
And fourth is to change your attitude towards the offender. What I've recognized, though, is in this four-stage process of forgiveness is that when it comes to racial oppression or cultural bias or victimization for gender or whatever, if I, the offended party, never get a chance to verbalize to someone what has happened to me, I will never experience healing. The way God's wired us is that the cathartic process of us releasing this venom of pain has to come out in a verbal exchange. I have to be able to say to someone, you know, I was hurt, I was abused, I was taken advantage of, I was overlooked. And when I do that, somehow it's like the toxins of racism has been released through that conversation. That's why when someone's reading my book, it's not good enough just to read the book. That's why I put together this six-lesson, a study guide, which is a free study guide that they can get access to it from simply going to the website, theskinyoulivein.com. They can download it free. And their groups, it's a group study, so that in the group study process, someone's getting a chance to share their story. And in sharing their story of how they got to where they are, or perhaps even talking about, like we opened up in the conversation, who was your first childhood friend of a different race, those little statements are so freeing and liberating that, you know, and you'll recognize that somehow a load's been lifted. Somehow I've been lightened. Somehow I've been more impacted. Somehow I'm more equipped to be this cross-cultural and cross-racial individual. I just wanted to throw that out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Allen, just we are so glad that you could join us this morning, and just the information, the understanding, the insight that you've been able to give us, and by secondary listening, our listeners as well. Just thank you so much for being with us. How can people find The Skin You Live In? How can they find the book and the resources and more information about you?
It's my pleasure. You know, if a person just goes to any bookstore, they can get it, as well as online, Amazon.com, and they can get it there, or Barnes and Noble.com. You know, simply look for the book, The Skin You Live In. In terms of getting in touch with me, they could. I'm on Twitter, so my title there, my Twitter name is Dr. David Ireland, and it's Dr. David and then Ireland, spelled like the country. People could tweet me and I can respond, or they go to my website, davidireland.org.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I appreciate just your vulnerability, your willingness to walk us through this conversation. I am encouraged that our listeners on this Saturday morning will have the chance to be chewing on this all day. And as I was saying to Rob before the show started, we cannot avoid the subject. We no longer live country or in a time where you just spend time with folks who look and sound and come from exactly where you have. We will interact all day long today with folks of different nationalities and colors. So I appreciate the practical steps you gave us.
Well, my pleasure,
again,
Beth.
How to
my
build
pleasure, Rob.
Friendships.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Thank
all
you
right.
so much.
Well, yes, blessings to you, Dr. Allen. Thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Have a great Saturday.
Thanks.
All right, you too. Beth, you're so right. You know, we talked during the break. It just, you know, he Dr. Allen called it the tanning of America. So even if you live in the United States, there's very few places left where you are going to just interact with people who are just like you all the time.
That's right.
It's an unavoidable subject. So we better get good at it.
I mean, and know how to ask questions and know when common ground is the right approach and when it doesn't matter if you don't have common ground. You just want to understand where they're coming from, why they are doing or acting or saying or deciding or speaking in the ways that they are. That because you also want to be understood.
Yeah. And I can't help but think, you know, the kinds of questions that we talked about today, why is it important? What if I'm afraid of offending someone? What role does forgiveness play, and how can I do that? Those are all the questions that Dr. Ireland, you know, he's a smart guy. He's been around, and these are the questions in his book, The Skin You Live In, that book will help you figure this kind of stuff out. And hopefully our listeners could tell from listening to him, he loves Jesus. He's a good guy. And so there's nothing to be afraid of. Buy the book, go out there and start having great conversations and relationships with people who are not just like you.
And once that friendship begins, something awakens inside of you. I mean, I host, you know, our listeners know I host Americans on missions trips all the time, and many of them come to Mexico with a preconceived idea of a Mexican, right? That they're all sneaking across the border, or they all have some kind of, you know, drug in their pocket, or they all are taking siestas in the middle of the day, or whatever it is that
right.
Their preconceived idea, until they interact and befriend one, and then they realize actually none of those things are true about the vast majority of Mexicans, and you shift, something awakens in you, and then all of a sudden you have a whole new way of seeing people, the kind of people that you're going to spend the rest of your life interacting with. And so I just like the idea that it starts at that micro level, that friendship level, and then it will grow to the macro level. Then maybe we'll be able to lead our country better. We'll be able to have multiracial churches. Maybe we'll be able then to be educated side by side. Like, start at the micro and then grow it to the macro.
I couldn't help but wonder when you were talking during the segment about your trip to India, and you just had to ask the question of your Indian friends about what effect that the caste system had on the church. I can't help but what was the answer?
Oh, man. It was so fascinating because the vulnerability came when he said, you know, I have Indian Christian friends that disappoint me. And that's really vulnerable. When you can be vulnerable about the way your own, you don't have to be defensive about your own culture, but you can recognize what its weaknesses are. And, they talked about you don't really marry outside of your caste, how to fellowship, how to do outreach outside of your caste, just all the really practical things that happen when you have this thousands of years tradition inside of your faith. You know, Christianity today, in this last month, had a whole section about how Muslims, for a fact, were following Christ, but within the Muslim faith, how those are called insider movements, and how if you don't know a Christ follower who's inside of the Muslim faith, you think, are you kidding me? That you cannot do that. But once
that's right, the first reaction from people is like, well, that's impossible.
Yes. Until you meet one.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the same kind of things happened. We didn't get a chance to talk to Dr. Ireland, but, you know, some other things he talks about in the book. Why are churches predominantly monoracial, monoethnic, right? And that, you know, we talked around that a little bit, but these are the kind of questions that we need to be asking ourselves.
The question is, how does anybody get into a church? You go to church because someone invited you there. So if a church is all one color, then those people are having conversations with people that are all the same color. That's why.
That's exactly right. Well, we got another interesting show next week. I mean, we last week, you know, we were talking about trafficking. This week we're talking about racial relations. Next week, totally different topic. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, who is the author of the best-selling New York Times best-selling book, The Harbinger, is going to be with us. I don't even know what to think of this conversation, so I hope people will join us next week. We've had some great conversations, some great topics. If you want to go and see what those are, BethGuckenberger.com. You can download any show that we've done, and we hope you do that. So, Beth, great talking to you this week.
You too. Have a great weekend.
All right. Great weekend to you guys, too. Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Join us next week. Until then, have a great Saturday.